Welcome to the RepChat Inside Stories series, conversations with creative talent and creative entrepreneurial businesses. We discover the inside stories that inspire and motivate creative people to do what they do. Hello and welcome to the RepChat. And today in the virtual studio, I'm really delighted to have Russell Bulter, we call him Russ, with me. And Russ has had a fascinating career and he combines executive coaching and he's had a background in acting. So he's a lead coach at KPMG's PEM program. He's a communications and business strategy masterclass for new partners across Europe. He's coached more than 20 groups over 10 years. He's the lead communication coach of KPMG's C-suite program. For Global Mobility Services, he runs a biannual communications masterclass. He's a regular pitch coach in the UK and NL firms. He coaches senior business leaders to communicate with impact and clarity. He began his professional life, as a professional actor. And for over 20 years, he worked in British theatre and television. He continues to narrate documentaries for David Attenborough in the BBC Natural History Unit. He's also a series narrator for the National Geographic Channel. He's a certified NLP life coach. So welcome, Russell.
Thank you very much. Wow. Thanks.
I love the way that we've been brought together through a mutual friend. She just said that you are an amazing person. So I'm so pleased to talk to you. And I'm very excited to talk about your approach to communication. Yeah. I know that you deal with people that have to make big decisions and strategies, and then you help them with the communication part and the articulation.
Yeah.
So do you mind if we just take a step back to the origins of you as a young person?
Yeah.
In the acting career. So
how you want to start with the spotty stage, don't you? That's okay. I'll go there for you. Happy to do that.
So what was it that made you think, I'm going to do this acting thing?
Well, okay, I can take it back to an event. So I'm 13 years old. I'm in a really tough secondary modern school in Warrington. The thing in my school was football and rugby. That was it. And anything remotely arty was deeply suspicious. And then this music teacher called Mrs. Fogg arrived at my school and decided she was going to put on a production of Oliver. And she cast me as the artful dodger. And because no one in my school was interested in acting, I was the only kid in the school who was in the play. And she had to cast the rest of the play with the teachers. So there it is, Christmas term. The whole of my school is in the hall. And I'm backstage at my physics teacher, my maths teacher, about to walk on stage. And they're terrified. They're just terrified. And I'm not. Because I've got no status in that school at all and absolutely nothing to lose. And I calmed them down. I've no idea how I did it. I just did. I walked on the stage and I didn't care. And I had this moment of liberation. And when I sang that song to Nancy, you know, I'll have a go. It's a bit early in the morning. I'll have a go. I'd do anything for you, dear. Something happened. And the audience loved it. I loved it. I found something I could do. And I just felt alive. And the next day at school, I'm walking to school. My physics teacher waves at me. And then the lads who used to beat me up in the school bus invite me behind the bike shed and give me cigarettes. In the maths class, the girl I'd fancied for 2 years and couldn't speak to sent me a note asking to go out with me. And I went, this would be a good job. And there was this moment when I thought, well, here is a possibility of a whole new life. So honestly, that's how it happened. I'm indebted to my lovely music teacher, Mrs. Fogg, who was just saw something in me and threw me in the deep end. And, you know, I had nothing to lose. So that's how it all started.
So there's something about being thrown in the deep end, having nothing to lose.
Yes.
Stepping forward from those, that early genesis of, I'm going to throw myself in the deep end. You went on and you became you still are a successful actor and you do a voiceover work. So from that background, you moved into executive coaching.
Yes.
Can we talk just a little bit of journey from the stage to the boardroom?
Sure. I loved being an actor. I had a fantastic time, and I'd had a sort of ambition that I wanted to play Hamlet, which I'd thankfully had a go at. And there was some musical theatre I wanted to do, done that. And then I reached this sort of odd stage in my career where the only job I could ever get was playing a policeman. And I was constantly playing policeman, and I just started to get a bit bored. So I started teaching, and I started teaching at Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. And then I started to produce plays, and I found I enjoyed bringing stuff out of people as much as I did performing. And by accident, I was asked to go and coach someone who'd lost about £1 million worth of business. And by the way, partnership in a business, because his client thought he was cold and indifferent. And he was so desperate, he'd try anything. And someone had said, look, I know this acting teacher. Do you want to spend a day with him and see if you can help? So I just showed up, and I'd had no involvement in business apart from having raised money for various shows I produced. So I wasn't completely inept. And I sort of went in, and I just said, show me what you're saying to them. And I noticed straight away he had two performances going on. One was who he was when I met him, which was a really clever, nice man. And then there was his professional persona, which was cold and indifferent. And I just went, you're doing acting. So let me show you how to do a performance that's more connected to who you truly are. And for me, that's what acting was about. It's sort of telling the truth about a character that you're playing. And in real life, we've got to play different sides of our own character. So how do you do that? So I just showed him some moves that I knew from drama school and from being a theatre practitioner. And he got the work back within a week. And then a few months later, he was made partner. And I just went, oh my goodness, this thing I know about is probably worth about £1 million. So my job is, how do I help people be themselves under this kind of work pressure in a business context? So he recommended me to someone else, and that's how it started, really. And I find myself now 15 years later with clients all over the place and loving it. And each new client brings me a new demand to learn something or do something or go a bit deeper. So that's sort of how I went from being an actor to a director to a business coach.
Wow. So, and you're bringing the core skills with you, the core skills of communication, understanding the difference between the authentic self and the projected self.
Yes.
That sometimes people do in business. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. There's almost like, I don't know who decided, but there's like this wet blanket, a corporate wet blanket that descends. And as soon as people talk about their business, they think, and the word they use, interestingly, is gravity. I have to have gravity. I have to be heavy. And then you think, well, what you really mean is, I think you want people to trust you. And if that's the case, do you trust people who only have gravity? And the truth is, no, we trust people who are willing to be honest, and we trust people when we know we're safe. So I'm safe with you if you're honest with me. And then people go, oh, all these quirks I've got, all these things that maybe I'm a bit embarrassed about. If I dare to be vulnerable, that's when I'm really creating a bit of trust and communication, genuine communication becomes possible, genuine connection becomes possible. But I actually believe that communication is about common unity. I find a unity in common ground. And that means if I put on a performance, even if I'm on a stage, the audience is going to go, do I believe this performance or not? And so I suppose what I'm bringing to people is, look, you've got more possibilities than this gravity thing. How do you really feel about what you're saying? And that's when people say, and again, I think this is part of the professional persona. They say, oh, well, it's really boring. My stuff is boring. And I go, well, I've got one client at the minute. And they said that to me. And I said, all right, well, tell me what your software does. What does it actually do? Because you've been rattling on to me. And to be honest, I'm bored. What's your software do in the world? And the guy said to me, we stop bombs going off And I went, what do you mean? He said, well, we can watch what people buy. And if people are buying the stuff that makes improvised explosive devices, we probably know they're going to make a bomb. So then I said, well, what did you do? So then what we do is we get in touch with, in this one particular case, with the local Indian police force. And we told them we thought this guy was building a bomb. So I said, well, what happened? And he said, well, they said, could you check with your satellite? So we changed our satellite and we monitored him. And we saw him on a scooter. And there was a chemical signal in his backpack. So we warned them where he was. And they stopped him and he was on a way to a market. And I went, how many people would he have killed? And he said, about 600.
Wow.
And I went, you stop terrorists killing people. And he went, yeah. And I said, why aren't you saying that then? And he said, it's a bit dramatic. I just went, yes, the world is dramatic. We live in a dramatic world. And I'm looking for people, or the people you're speaking to, are really interested in can you help us stop terrorists doing bad things? And you've got the kind of stuff that helps them. Please tell them that story. And they just had come from this sort of background of IT and studying software, and they just didn't get the value of what they were doing. They felt it was somehow phony or exaggerating. And I suppose that's the culture that I found myself in, is I'm just trying to help people maybe get in touch with the genuine side of the drama that they're in, so that they don't feel embarrassed by saying what they do in the real world. I don't know who made these kind of corporate rules.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And I wonder if this is a much case of unlearning corporate behaviours much as learning new ones.
Exactly. I think that's spot on. Is that, yeah, somebody said, you've got to look like this, you've got to sound like this, and there's this sort of corporate clone thing everybody buys into. Do you know what? It might actually work in the early start of a career, but if as soon as you hit the middle of your career, as soon as you aspire to maybe lead, you have to have something else going on.
How do we take down these masks or these personas and step into authentic communication at a very senior level?
No, that's it. That's the question, isn't it? And I think, how do you do it? I think what happens is, I tend to get the call when something's gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's reached the edge of what they can do and they need more and they're stuck. And so I think what I do straight away, first of all, what I do, if I can, and they'll let me, is I film people. So I'll just say, give me your phone, put the video function on, show me what you're doing. And I hold the camera there and I just go, okay, I'm now going to ask you to do some stupid things. And then I coach them and they don't want to do it because it feels vulnerable.
Mm.
But I'll just go, well, just give it a shot. I won't put it on YouTube. And I film that. And then I go, right, I'm going to show you two versions of you. And you tell me which is the real you, which is the one I'd meet socially. So they look at it and they go, well, the second one. And then I can go, all right, if you're in a room with someone, they're going to talk to you for 30 minutes, which one of these two versions of you do you want to listen to? And they always say the second one. And what they're dealing with straight away is this thing that actors know about called the perception gap. And there's a gap between what you think you're doing and what you're actually doing. And when you go to drama school to learn to be an actor, they're spending 3 years hammering away at your perception gap, so you can get more accurate understanding, I suppose, of how you come across or how you don't come across and what you need to do for the required thing. So if it might be, okay, you're doing Shakespeare and you think because you're feeling really emotional, you're brilliant. But the fact is, no one can understand a word you're saying because you're mumbling. Now, if you don't get somebody working with you on your diction, doesn't matter how emotionally brilliant you are, If you're just mumbling and the words are, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players and they have their exits and their entrances and you're going, stage, you know, you're feeling it. Your perception is, I'm giving the best performance of my life here. Give me an Oscar. But the audience is going, what? So it's exactly the same issue as an executive, is you're standing there talking about a change program and why it matters in your business. And you might think that you're being brilliant, you know, and actually what you're doing is and so the signal in the way you're communicating is, I've got nothing to say, I'm bored, you should be bored too. And that's what happens in the executive world. So I suppose I've got, what I do is I'm helping people see the difference between what they think they're doing, what they can do, and then I'm supporting them to kind of make that journey. And it's vulnerable. You've got to be brave. But I often find that I've been very lucky in the clients that I've had that they're up for some change. You know, they're up to have a go, and they're a delight to work with, because if someone wants to have a go, they'll take risks. And when people take risks, kind of magical things happen.
Well, that goes right back to your initiation story of what have I got to lose? I'm going to throw myself in and the magic that came from that. Yeah. And as listening to you, I'm getting a sense that this is a deep delve into self-awareness.
Wow.
There's something about, I think I come across and how I really come across.
Yeah.
And maybe getting real with that.
Yeah. I suppose it's because when I've been to the theatre and seen an extraordinary performance or watched an amazing performance on film, I feel like I'm just given something that helps me in my life. And I go, wow, that's, I want more of that, please. And I suppose I'm just attracted to it. I'm just attracted to whatever that is. That moment, there's sort of the clear moments where somebody expresses something and it's true and helpful and cathartic even. And I'm really attracted to what that is. I'm sort of chasing it.
And is that something that you help other people create around themselves?
Well, I'm hoping to. I don't tell them that, by the way. This is the first time I've articulated it, really. So wow. Thank you for asking me the question.
So and seeing as this, you know, step into that space, take a risk, there's the difference between your real social self and the projected. There's something about awareness. There's something about vulnerability of allowing yourself to be a little bit unsafe.
Yes.
To really, really get it.
Yes.
And I'm just thinking in situations where you feel the shield is really up, you know, people don't want to go there.
Yeah.
What do you tend to, I won't say do or think, is there a way that you deal with that when you really see there's a real shield here?
And I think people practically, I'm very grateful to have been let into the business world. I mean, you know, imposter syndrome is a thing we all have. And I found myself in situations in boardrooms thinking, do I have a right to be here? And the answer is no. And we were talking about this, until you ask a stupid question, because you can. Because, you know, I can hear a presentation and go, look, can you assure me that the people you're speaking to who will hear this presentation understand what you're talking about? Because I've sat here for 20 minutes and I don't know what you mean. And then there's usually a horrible silence. And I remember, I'm always grateful to this man in a room once who said, put his hand up and he said, to be honest, I'm a forensic tax expert and I didn't understand. And everybody left. And the guy in the room said, I just thought you wanted me to sound clever. And then there was a release. Uh-huh. So if you like, sometimes a stupid comment can take the shield down. Because it's about protecting yourself when you feel vulnerable. On the other hand, I think in the business world, people are clever and they go, I'm going to do a risk assessment here. If I make a mistake, what are the consequences? So it's safer not to make a mistake. So that's why they're doing this sort of numbed up, dulled down version of themselves. Because to be vulnerable is not safe. And when that is the culture, and unfortunately you see it in businesses, you go, well, this isn't somewhere that's nice to work and there's very little you can do. And I think people are often making that choice. They're saying, if I stay in this business, is it going to destroy me? Or if I stay here, can I influence it for the better? And, you know, that's a decision lots of people have to make at various stages of their career. And I think what's happened with the pandemic is, and with the great resignation, is that's just forced that issue out into the open for a lot of people. And they've gone, Can I change? Can I make this a more human, a more successful place? Is this what I wanted to do with my working life? And if the answer is no, then what am I doing? So if I give you an example, a friend of mine that I work with is my partner in the New York part of what we're doing. He started to work at Bank of America, and he was asked to come in to do the sort of stuff we do in our little business, because they were losing all their talent. They were losing 40% of their new hires coming into work, and they just disappeared within the first 6 months. And they, you know, spent a lot of money recruiting them and training them, and they assumed that they were leaving for higher paid jobs. They did a bit of research and found out no, they were all going for much lower paid work in the emerging fintech movement, if, for the want of a better phrase. They were more interested in challenger banks who were doing new, exciting, innovative things. And they weren't motivated by money anymore. They want the adventure. They want the meaning. So what my friend Ryan did, who's my partner, he said, right, first thing I'm going to do is all of your senior managers have to take out the new hires to dinner. They have to sit down, have a meal with them, and find out what they want to do and be in the next 5 years. And all they do is listen and find out. That's it. And so they did it, and they've halved the loss rate. Because what they heard back was, we're here and nobody talks to us. Nobody cares. We're invisible. Why would we stay here for the money? We can go and do this. But as soon as the senior leaders got to know them, got to find out what's making them tick, they were able to sort of help them with development goals. They were able to just connect and value them. And you just go, well, actually, we're in a world where people want it to mean something. And maybe they always have, but they sort of traded that off for the sake of money. And now the equation's different. And that people really do want the meaning. So I think if I go back to your original question about how do you take the masks off, is people have realized they've actually got a lot to lose. If you just sort of sleepwalk through your career, you know, you turn around in your late 50s and think, what the hell was that for? What? Why did I do that? What? You know, retirement's not far off. Am I fulfilled? It's not just about the bank account. It's, have I done something that I feel good about, that energizes me, that makes me come alive? And more and more, that I think that's what I'm aware of. And which is bizarre, because when I started my working life, when I started out as an actor in the early 1980s, I mean, lots of people in my family were really worried for me. You know, they were just going, look, you need a job to fall back on. You can't do this. And now I'm thinking, I'm saying to my daughter, you know, she goes to university, don't waste your time with mathematics. You need a theatre degree to fall back on. You know, you need to be able to help people communicate, because that's where we've ended up. It's almost like the whole culture's shifted.
I really agree with you so much. At RebCat, we started this organization in the pandemic, and we believe that creativity is our superpower. Okay. And to bring that into every aspect of our being, and also right back into business, start to be alive again, start to be human, start to grow that awareness, that curiosity, the joy that comes from making something up, and also seeing the difference that it can make.
Yeah.
So in your experience, with this approach of, should we say, you know, building the awareness, allowing the vulnerability, the message of connection being so important. And I agree with you. And I know from Simon Sinek's work that, you know, after a certain level, money doesn't, it's not the only indicator why people turn up for work and do a good job.
Yeah.
Is this something which is unique to the work that you do, or you think this is something that's happening at large, this awareness that we need to change our style of leading, of communicating? Is it something that you think is really a little bit more than just an isolated thing that you've discovered in your work?
I don't think it's just to do with me. It does feel like the atmosphere has changed. There's been a massive shift. One way someone described the pandemic to me is said, okay, the tide's gone out and you can see who's not wearing swimming trunks. You know, it exposes people. But at the same time, it sort of made people into more extreme versions of themselves. So at the back end of that now, I think it's in the atmosphere that it's not. Of course, there's some people who are just motivated by money, but they're not the majority anymore. I'd say it's shifted. I mean, if Pareto's principle holds, I'd say it's probably 20% of people just want the money. That's okay. You know, it's a choice. But I'd say my experiences, I'm seeing it everywhere I work. All the people I talk to are talking about it. All the coaches that I know that we talk about our clients, that's the atmosphere.
And I experienced that as well, Russ. And I just wanted to make sure you're just connecting to it. Wasn't just an anecdotal, I think this is going on, but I don't have any evidence of it. Yeah. It's actually saying there's something in the ether, which is how do we make our lives fulfilling? You know, that our life, it becomes something creative and fulfilling. And to be that, we need to be our true self.
Yes. Yeah.
And right. drop the mask, because there's so much more that we can explore.
I love Brené Brown's description of the 10-ton shield, because it does shield you, but it weighs 10 tons and it's a heavy thing to carry around. So for all of the benefit of the protection it gives you, it's killing you.
Yeah.
And I think she's right. You know, being vulnerable. Here's my personal story. You know, I had to drop the shield to stand on a stage and sing age 14 in the toughest secondary school in the northwest of England. I'd do anything for you, dear. Well, my voice was breaking, by the way, so it actually sounded like this. It went, I'll do anything for you, dear. You know, it was awful. It was awful. But frankly, you know, it got me a snog at the Christmas disco that otherwise I wouldn't have got, by pretending to be cool, by sitting there quietly hoping no one noticed me. So there is something to lose. There's something to lose if you don't have a go. And someone said to me, with the acting thing, because I knew what a precarious profession it was when I went into it, is failure is easier to live with than regret. I sort of live by that. I've just thought, okay, I tried, I failed, I had a go though. That's okay. But I've met people who have gone, I should have done this and I should have. And that's what eats you up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So don't be afraid of failure. Be afraid of regret, I think.
Well, I think that's maybe a good moment to end this conversation. But I'd love to have another follow up on this, because I think there's so much more we could explore. Where can people find you? Could people thinking, I need a Russ in our organization? Where can they find?
Wow, thank you. So I'm on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. It's like someone described it as boring Facebook. It's not boring. It's just people are polite to each other on LinkedIn, terrified of Facebook. So you can find me on LinkedIn, and actually that's it. I think that's the best place to find me if you haven't met me. And I do have a website. So I work with a business called GSB Comms. I'm B of GSB. There's a Mr. G and a Mr. S and a bunch of other friends as well, who occasionally, for a reason unbeknown to us, associate themselves with us. So you can get in touch with me if you do GSB Comms, and I'll take you to our website.
We're going to put those details in the show notes. And on a final note, you've left the listeners with so many, you know, rich and wise things. We mentioned this Askarot, the role of the fool. Is there any other things that you would add to that? Because, you know, we know that this is not to be a fool, but there's something about the innocence of just stepping forward. Is there anything else that you could add to that?
I just remember... I was, my first acting job was an absolute brilliant first acting job. I'd spent 6 months after drama school working in the toy department in Selfridges. And I think God took pity on me and let me have a good job after that torture of selling sort of mechanical penguins to spoiled children for 6 months. But I got in the Royal Shakespeare Company, Anthony Sher had just played Richard III. And I was put in a rehearsal room with Alan Rickman, playing Jacques in As You Like It. And my job was to stand at the front of the stage so Alan Rickman could deliver the speech, All the World's a Stage and All the Men and Women Merely Players, which is one of the great Shakespearean speeches. So I watched him in rehearsals and I thought, yeah, you're pretty good. And then we opened and I thought, why are you changing it? And he kept changing it. And I'll always remember this one performance, and he started and he said, "All the world's a stage." And you know that lovely voice he had. Mm. And my back was to the audience, and I just felt the audience go, "Ah!" And it just went quiet. And he did the speech, and he just found something. And I realized he'd been struggling to find something vulnerably. He could have just been brilliant and stuck with it and just repeated it. And he didn't. He had a go at being, he was on some kind of adventure with it. And he finished the speech and there was a standing ovation. Now I couldn't see it because I'm back to the audience, but I could feel it. And it was like someone had slapped him in the face. He didn't expect that. And we had to hold this moment. And then we carried on with the play. And we walked off stage and everyone congratulated him. And he just, "Oh, off. Let's just keep telling the story, keep telling the story." And I suppose what I learned from that, which is the sort of principle of the fool in the King's Court, is the person who dares to keep telling the truth, the awkward bugger, will eventually hit gold somewhere. And I've always wanted ever since that to go, don't stop searching for it. Don't give up. Because, you know, I'm going to remember that forever. It was brilliant. He just hit something that was magical. And I know everyone who saw that will remember it forever. And I suppose that's the, why miss out on the opportunity to do that? You know, why miss that chance if you've got it? So I suppose dare to be vulnerable, because there's a huge payoff if you do.
Thank you very, very much, Russ.
Oh, wow. Pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the RebChat Inside Stories series. We hope you enjoyed it. To feature your inside story, contact us at www.rebcatcreations.com or follow us on Instagram at RebCatCreations.